In today's show, we have Darren Muriner. He is a CEO and co-founder of Cloverleaf, based in Cincinnati. And we're going to talk about using high-tech software to build better teams.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutte, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Darren, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. Look forward to the conversation today.
Absolutely. So, Darren, how did you get started in your career and where are you from? What's your background?
Yeah, gosh, I'll go all the way back. And I grew up in Berea, Kentucky. So, South Central Kentucky. It's kind of known for Berea College, which is a free tuition school focused on Appalachia. And a great little town to grow up in, but small. And I needed to get to a bigger territory. So graduated from University of Kentucky with a business degree and a computer science minor, and came to Cincinnati. Actually had two job offers, one with Procter & Gamble and the other with Arthur Andersen. And actually remember, part of my decision-making process is like, I don't know, consumer products, pretty fickle consumers, right? I mean, consumer tastes move and change. And I know they've been around for 130 years or however long it had been at that point. But, you know, everyone needs their taxes done and everyone needs audits and, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. And so I went with Arthur Andersen, and then a year and a half later, they crumbled under the weight of the Enron disaster. Mm-hmm. So funny little anecdote for the start of my career, which was nothing is ever safe.
Yeah, exactly. And a friend of mine started Arthur Andersen right out of college and had the exact same thing happen to her. So, yeah.
It was an interesting time. And I mean, we could probably spend an entire podcast just on that time period.
Yeah. And then how did you, as you go through your career, what made you want to get into running a software business? How did you get on that path? And how did you start?
The interesting thing is if Andersen hadn't collapsed, I'd probably still be there. I mean, I loved it. I loved the team. I loved the opportunity to get to work with some of the clients we got to work with. The work was just incredibly engaging, and they had a great culture, despite the fact that, you know, the office in Houston did what they did. And I went from there, and I had two more kind of corporate stops in my career before I kind of officially embraced the label of entrepreneur. And in that 15-year career while I was in corporate, I would consistently have side projects. So my wife and I started a business in 2003. That turned into another business. She sold the original business, but that kept me kind of occupied. I did real estate. I started a news site. I just always had side projects. And it was interesting because I would tell people, I'd be like, man, I can be a rock star in the corporate world. And only be engaged about 50%, right? Yeah, and there was something about that always just kind of was disappointing, you know, like where I could be as successful as I was and only give 50% of myself. And I needed these other things outside of my corporate, you know, the day job to really keep me excited and energized to show up to work every day. And that was really kind of one of the first things that kind of like got me thinking along a different path. Ultimately, the entrepreneur inside of me, you know, I just kind of came to embrace that label and said, you know, I'm just ready to go. And, you know, why live two lives? You know, obviously the paychecks were nice on the corporate side, but I'd rather not be, you know, so duplicative in terms of, you know, my persona and really just embrace the fact that I was an entrepreneur and kind of went into it full time.
Gotcha. Cool. And then when was Cloverleaf started? What year?
Gosh, that is a funny question, because theoretically we started working on it in 2015, just with the general concept. And I'll step back a little bit, because Cloverleaf is in the HR technology space, but I don't have an HR background. I'm not a PhD in IO psychology. But what I did do is I was always fascinated. I just mentioned the fact that, like, man, gosh, why was I 50% engaged but could still be a rock star in the corporate world? And that was some of the early inklings. But I also just was always fascinated by good management, bad management, and, you know, how organizations, the cultures that are created and the impact of the culture on performance. I just had always been fascinated in that process. And the last job that I had, I met my coworker, and we would do, I don't know, anywhere from 100 to 150 concurrent video projects. So these were like digital videos, short, you know, minute and a half to 3 minutes. And we ran those projects basically the same. You know, every single project had kind of a similar flow to it. And what we began to kind of really notice was the fact that, like, the outcomes of those projects were really dependent on the combinations of people that we put together in those teams. So we could put a designer with a creative director and it would just fall flat on its face. But we'd take that same designer, put them with a different creative director, and it would be a grand slam home run. And it really just kind of started us thinking about, man, there's got to be a way to bring some transparency to this process. And that was really kind of the inklings in 2015. Now, we didn't officially start our business. So my co-founder, Kirsten, and I went full time and kind of said, yeah, we're going to do this in early 2017. So that's when I would say it got started. And we went through the Ocean Accelerator in Cincinnati. And that's what I would consider our start date. We did get funding and hired three people, and we were all kind of officially, you know, we had five employees, March 5th, 2018. So that would be another date that you could point to say that was when we started Cloverleaf.
How did you get connected with Ocean, and why was that sort of the best fit for you? What was that sort of that point of the company?
Yeah, like? most of the entrepreneurial activity I'd done prior to Cloverleaf was, you know, really just bootstrapped. It was things that, you know, my wife and I invested in, or, you know, we kind of just funded ourselves. And I'd just always been fascinated at the idea of scale and, you know, leveraging venture capital and angel funding to really accelerate growth and kind of get to that first mover advantage. Right. And, so I'd always been fascinated with that model, but I knew we needed the right business to come along to kind of go down that path. And, you know, it's, if you're in Cincinnati, and I think if you're in most markets, there's just a lot of conversation around the new venture creation, especially new tech venture creation. And I think there's a bit of a mystique, I think, about fundraising and venture capital, because you hear kind of like the massive success stories of, like, oh, this person put in $2.5 million and they exited with, you know, 400 million or whatever the number is. Mm-hmm. And those stories, I think, kind of captivate people. And, you know, very few actually turn out to be that successful. But that was, Cloverleaf was the first one, that first idea or first opportunity that we had to really kind of take advantage of that venture capital space. And, you know, Cincinnati, they had a really strong kind of network and organizations that were resourcing venture-backed startup creation. And so I just kind of stayed in touch with that space. I was, you know, and still am a member at Crossroads, which is kind of what birthed Ocean. And so knew about it through there and said, hey, I think we should apply here. And I think that could be a really great source of some initial startup funds.
Where are you located now? Where do you work out of? Do you have an office?
Yeah, our office is, and right now we're all working out of our homes because we're, you know, coronavirus quarantined. But prior to that, we worked mostly on the Ohio side, but we're in the process of kind of moving to Kentucky and working out of Covington, so over Pike Street near Braxton Brewing.
Okay, so you got the initial funding you mentioned. You hired a team, and we're building the product and all that. I don't know if it was before then or after that point, but, you know, what was your kind of your first big break getting a new customer, and how did that happen? That really kind of set you on a path.
Yeah, I think especially when you're building tech products, you know, you're selling the vision. and oftentimes the product itself may not necessarily be at that point, but you need some core functionality that delivers some value to clients, but while also kind of casting vision for what could be with the product. So that was kind of a tricky place to be in 2017. You know, we're working with an MVP product. You know, we knew that it wasn't going to be kind of the product that we eventually wanted, you know, the vision that we had for what the product was. But, you know, it's a really great way to operate in a lean way, you know, invest small amounts to get customer feedback and understand how they're going to use the product. And a big part of it is you just had to go out and hustle. And so I think one of the first paying clients we had was a company called Illumination Works. It was a smaller, you know, kind of software development company, but great for really just kind of going to school for like, hey, what are some of the problems we can help you solve? You know, what are some of the challenges that you're experiencing with teams? And, you know, when you're in that client service delivery model, you know, teams are even more tricky because, you know, it's not just inside your own four walls. You're working with clients and you might have one or two of your people in with, you know, a larger group of their people. And so that dynamic is always an interesting place for team building, which is ultimately what Cloverleaf became. And maybe that's a good next step is to talk about exactly what is Cloverleaf.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I was going to ask. So tell us about the product and the system and a little bit about the tech stack for it too, because I'm curious, but mainly just, you know, how do users use it and what does it help them do?
So with kind of the experience that we had in that digital video agency, you know, we're like, hey, we want to create a technology product that kind of gives some transparency into that process. And a big part of that is, you know, it comes back to psychology and how that's been done to, you know, at least to date, is you would use psychometric tools like Myers-Briggs or DISC or Enneagram or StrengthsFinder, right? These tools that everybody has taken over the course of their careers, but oftentimes just doesn't really have a way to engage people towards behavior change over time, right? So everyone wants growth and personal development. There's always self-awareness, I think, that comes from those tools, but there's no way to sustain it. You know, a 40-page report that's all about you, that's point in time. Yeah, I might get a couple ahas out of that, but then, like, I go back to my job the next day or the following Monday, and it's kind of like I fall right back into the same habits and routines. And so we're like, hey, there's good research there, and there's data that we can use from a technology standpoint to build something compelling. But ultimately, what we wanted to do with the platform is create sustained behavior change, positive behavior change, of course. And one of the ways that we discovered early on that would be a fantastic way to reach people is through the tools that they use every day, right? So email, calendars, Slack, Microsoft Teams. And the average employee interacts with 115 they have 115 interactions on a daily basis, right? It could be, you know, 20 to the same person, but it's 115 different opportunities to coach or train or develop that individual on the other end. And so we built integrations to Microsoft 365, Google for Business, Slack, and really leveraged the data that existed in those tools to inform the kind of coaching and content that we could serve up to people. To really help drive that sustained behavior change. And a big part of that too is having a clear understanding of who you're working with, right? So it's one thing to know your own, you know, have self-awareness, but it's another to really understand what drives and motivates and, you know, why someone's communicating the way they're communicating on your team. And that was the other really big component to our product is really not just self-discovery, right? But also having a clear understanding of the people that I'm working with and how to adapt my style to be most effective with those people. So that's a little bit about our product.
And so how does that look, you know, when you talk about integrating and, or, you know, with like your email client, for instance, or a calendar? So it is a matter of, you know, it knows some of the various, like you said, psychometric profiles, you know, say like the DISC profile of some of the guests at the meeting, or the person you're emailing with and tries to advise you on how you might best communicate with them.
Yep, is that sort that's of what exactly it does? Right. So, I mean, and each of our integrations are a little bit different. So That's the calendar integration. You nailed it. The other kind of use case in that scenario for Slack and Microsoft Teams is, you know, we'll push content out to a specific channel based on the people that are in that channel. And then we offer prompts really for people to engage around that content with each other in the Slack channel. So a good example was, you know, we have an intern on our team named Elena, and, you know, we got, this is just a, it's a very recent example. I got something pushed into our channel about Elena that talked about how, you know, she really values causes that are important to her. And then the prompt is, you know, hey, talk about a cause or an organization that you're interested in and you're committed to, and why you're interested in it, right? So like it's a small prompt to engage people in a conversation, to deepen understanding and a sense of connection in the course of the team, to really kind of build trust and get people to a new place in the context of the team. So each of our integrations are a little bit different, but really the focus is on building relationships, improving collaboration and communication towards better outcomes.
Interesting. I mean, you know, and you see some, I've seen other tools like that in the sales space, right, where they try to help you predict the type of, you know, messaging you should use to a given prospect based on what you know, it knows about their profile. Yep. And such. And it's interesting, though, because I've had, you know, I've gotten cold emails, for instance, from salespeople where they open up with some comment about the Reds or the Bengals or something, right? I'm not a sports person. And so they have turned me off even more because they started with talking about the Reds or something. Or, I mean, not that I despise the Reds, but I'm less of a Bengals fan.
Yeah, probably, you're right? Just like, don't waste my time. Yeah.
Yeah. Now it's like, why are you asking me something I specifically am uninterested in, right? And, but it's also interesting, too. You talk about, you know, I'm most familiar with the DISC profile system. That's what I've dealt with the most. And I remember having gone through some training around that. They'll talk about how, you know, your profile can change over time, right? But you're right that most people sort of are assigned one, and it's self-awareness, like, oh, I'm a D, I'm an I, great, okay. And you do start to notice. But, you know, if you can change over time, that would tend to indicate that there is some way you could start to, you could improve yourself if you weren't, you know, if you were too much one or the other, right? And that's not something that I think any of those standard profiling tools help you do. They just tell you, hey, FYI, you're a S. So what kind of content do you share? It sounds like that's part of it, to help people sort of improve and change.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And I think a big element for us is, you know, it needs to be positive, it needs to be action oriented, and it needs to be contextually relevant, right? And when we say contextually relevant, it needs to be appropriate for the channel that you're receiving that message, right? So if it's from the calendar, then it needs to be about your meeting, right? And then the other really important thing is, you know, the other thing that I've seen with these assessments is, you know, 40-50 page report. I don't know about you, but if somebody sends me a PDF document, first thing I do is look at how many pages are in the document. And, you know, if it's more than a couple, I'm like, I'll get to it later, right? And it just gets shuffled to the back of the inbox. And a big portion for us is like, it's two sentences, right? Like, you can read this on the fly. And, you know, some of the things you might just blow right past it because you're not in the right mindset for it. But inevitably, you know, once a week, a couple times a month, you know, people are getting tremendous insight that is actionable and that actually changes how they're thinking about or how they're approaching certain situations or certain people. And that's really what we want. And, you know, we get unsolicited post on LinkedIn and Instagram of, you know, people getting these coaching tips and these insights at just the right time, right? I wish I could take credit for that, but, you know, timing isn't necessarily something that we can, you know, we can account for. And, you know, the timing of when they've gotten some of these messages have just been spot on for helping them get past, you know, a hurdle that they've struggled with in their career or in the role that they're in for months or maybe even years. And those are the things that really kind of drive us, getting that kind of positive reinforcement about the product and how it's impacted their ability to be successful in the roles that they're in, is what really gets us excited to get up every day and do this.
How have you been able to measure that? Or have you figured out a way to maybe measure some of that performance increase for customers and sort of show that?
Yeah. So a big part of what we do is, you know, ask questions. I mean, our product is very engaging. So we're not just pushing content out and letting it in there. We ask people to rate the content. You know, how relevant is the content to them or in the context that they're in? And so that feeds, you know, a machine learning algorithm that allows us to kind of serve up the next best content. But the other thing that we can do is ask questions, you know, over a time period that gauges their sense of, you know, belonging on the team, their sense of well-being, the sense of collaboration. You know, how well are you collaborating with your teammates, or how well do you feel your teammates are collaborating with you? And then we can collect that data over a period of time. And what we see is, you know, generally, and I'll just average it out, about 35% improvement in things like collaboration, things like communication and engagement. And, you know, if you look at the marketplace in HR technology, if you think about an engagement tool, generally it's just pulse surveys and that's it. And what you're getting is a sense of where are the problems in my organization, but they're not really actually helping you solve that problem. We're actually moving the needle on those things and increasing all of those different elements, these soft skills that are typically really hard to measure and track, which is why, you know, ROI on HR technologies are so difficult. But we're actually demonstrating we can move the needle, you know, in as few as, you know, 3 months.
Interesting. What makes a high-performing team, you think? How do you define that?
There's obviously been a lot of research on that. And one of the things, and, you know, Patrick Lencioni's work is largely about trust. And I think that's the thing that we find most often as a starting point is the level of trust that exists in the team. And that's part of the reason why we focus so much on relationships and belonging, because, you know, where trust starts to erode is oftentimes when there's misconceptions or misperceptions of why someone is doing the thing that they're doing, right? Why are they doing the behavior that they are? And it's easy for us to project underlying assumptions about why they're doing that. And oftentimes they are negative, negative assumptions. And that's the stuff that erodes trust. So the more that we can bring those things forward and we can build relational equity among team members, the higher we're able to kind of increase the levels of trust that exist on the team. And that's the reason why we've taken the approach that we have with our product, is trust is a starting point. Now, there's a lot of other components that come into play, right? So communication, and I've mentioned that as well. You know, even just getting access to the tools that we need, or the having the skill sets that you need to be successful, having capacity and the availability to do those things, are all things that we, you know, typically consider. But, you know, if you really want to take a team from, you know, okay to good, or you know, good to great, if you will, it usually comes back to some element of trust.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
And I think you're right that any team I've ever been on that's been incredibly high output, it's because you never worried that anybody on the team was, you know, going to try to sabotage you or anything. You know, you had that trust. So that's interesting.
And a big part of that, too, is, you know, how committed are they to the team or the objective that you're trying to accomplish? You know, how clear is the mission? You know, there's a lot of those other elements that come into play, even with trust, right? Because trust is a really tricky thing. But, you know, how we've decided to focus is really more on the relational elements and how can we help improve that component of it.
Interesting. And you wrote a book recently in and around sort of this space called Corporate Bravery.
Yeah.
Can you talk about a little bit about what that term means, how you came up with it?
At the end of my kind of corporate career, I you know, spent some time just kind of reflecting, one, just because of the situation that I was in with kind of that last employer, and the experiences that I had there, but also with just kind of the totality of the experience that I had in the corporate space. And one commonality that I noticed was a lot of decision making made out of fear. And, you know, fear can come in a lot of ways, right? I mean, economic uncertainty, that's obviously a big one that we're currently faced with. But, you know, how people respond to competitive pressures, how people respond to the regulatory environment, even that interpersonal component, right? So like my relationship with my manager and the level of trust that I have there, there's so many opportunities for fear or mistrust to kind of creep into that, into those places. And so as I thought about that as a general component, I'm like, what's the opposite of fear, right? And it really is bravery. And so my focus was, how do you transform cultures from a fear-based decision-making process to one that is understands who they are, not just as an individual, but like organizationally, they understand who they are and where that, you know, what they're strong at, and how they can compete effectively in the marketplace. And then just go hard after that, you know, not be distracted by some of the other things that are easy to, you know, keep us from making the right decisions or the best decisions for our organization. And really just kind of lean into those things and be confident in, you know, who you are as a professional in that organization, but also just being confident in who the organization, the culture of that organization is, and how they can most effectively compete.
What's an example of like a fear-based decision, you think, in that framework? What's a type of decision people make out of fear, or a company makes out of
fear? Well, I mean, I think we're seeing a lot of that right now, right? Where it's, you know, obviously you've got to manage cash flow. You got to know what your runway is. But, you know, I'm seeing a lot of people who are making knee-jerk reactions to current economic situations. And I think if you asked anyone about the current kind of COVID-19 situation, no one believes this is going to drag on for longer than 12 to 18 months. You know, the most dire predictions would have this dragging out 18 months. And the reality is, like, fundamentally, the economy hasn't changed, right? The underlying demand and those things will return. But some of the decision making that I see on a very short term basis will actually sabotage long term, you know, value creation for shareholders. And that's just one example. You know, it's the most current example and relevant example that sits in front of us. But I mean, gosh, there are so many examples. You know, Amazon is one that I think about regularly, not Amazon themselves, but how people react to Amazon when they enter a new market, right? And I've seen people just completely abandon their long-term strategies and move in a completely different direction to try to compete against Amazon. And you're like, you can't out Amazon at this point. So you need to be really clear about who you are and lean into that. It could impact strategy, but don't throw the baby out with the bathwater in those scenarios.
Well, I feel like, you know, in this particular time, a company's sense of purpose, I'm very much a big believer in the concept of having a purpose, right? And there's a author and speaker I really like named Paul Chappelle who talks about it, and he says, you know, no one ever commits suicide because of hunger.
Yep.
Right. But they do because of a lack of purpose. Right. And I think you see that in some of these, you know, with some of these companies when workers are, you know, I know workers who are going without pay, but just to keep things running. And of course, you know, volunteering long hours to make extra masks, and you hear about all this kind of stuff happening, right? That's all very purpose driven. But if there's a company that, you know, had a much weaker culture where people were just sort of a cog in a machine, nobody's doing that for those type of employers. Right. I mean, those people's resumes hit the street a week ago, right? If they haven't already gotten, you know, some other job at Kroger or whatever, right? And so, you know, that's interesting. It can really come to define a company.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, one of the examples I gave too is like people's reactions to social media. You know, I think it's pretty easy for organizations look at social media, and you know, there's been some really high profile kind of mistakes that brands have made on social media. You know, they get too snarky, they get too, you know, or your social media manager confuses their personal account with their corporate account, and you know, are tweeting inappropriate things. And you know, I've literally heard brands talk about how they, you know, are intentionally not engaging with social media because of those, the fear that those things could happen to their organization. And, you know, the reality is, like, you've got to engage your customers where they're at, right? And if they're on Instagram or they're on TikTok or whatever new social media platform that your customers are at, then you better be there. You better have a voice that's relevant to your consumers. So, like, that's just another example of places where it's like, you know, just because one bad episode happened doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. It could still be very relevant to your business.
Well, I think the game board is always changing, right? The playing field is always changing. You know, I have a friend who is in the live video business, and you know, he has a customer he's done a ton of work with recently that a year ago said, "We will never do a live video. That's ridiculous. Why would we do that?" So I think it's, you know, I'm curious if you look at, you know, those most pessimistic projections right now of our current coronavirus pandemic and such, and even the most optimistic estimates, I think it's fair to say that the playing field has changed. And, you know, if you think about interaction with people and building relationships and teams, something that has always been sort of, you know, Bible truth is you need to meet someone face to face, shake their hand, sit down and look. I mean, there's that FaceTime concept, you know, that you need to have with people. So if we assume and say, okay, let's look at that pessimistic case that for a year and a half, you know, we will be shut in or something, which I think nobody is really exactly saying it that way. But how much more important do you think it is to use technology such as what you guys are building, or just other tools to help guide and grow relationships?
One of the ways I think about it, right, is clearly the market has shifted dramatically in the last few weeks, right? So, like, a good example of that is Microsoft Teams. Their daily average user counts were about 30 million as of the beginning of March. And in 1 week, so from March 11th to March 18th, they added 12 million daily active users. So, you know, what is that? More than, you know, 45% increase in a week.
Yeah.
And obviously that's going to happen in the midst of this, right? Because it's like, hey, what else, what other options do you have? But I think a lot of people look at this and they say, man, some of that's not going to shift back, right? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? Is it 40%? And I experience the same thing even with my kids who are, you know, schooling from home, right? Non-traditional instruction, I think is what is the new buzzword. And, you know, when my kids finish their work by 10 a.m., like it's going to make me stop and rethink like the value of education, right? And is there a better way to educate my children? So I think the same thing's going to happen in the workplace where at the end of that, they're like, wow, I actually was more productive. I have more flexibility. I can choose to go into the office once or twice a week and still get that kind of FaceTime interaction. But I think you're going to see a lot of that demand that shifted to remote is going to, a portion of it's going to stay remote. And, you know, it will, you know, cause a decrease in demand of, you know, office space. And, you know, there's a whole cascading of impacts. And yeah, I think technology is a huge component of that. So if, you know, 20 or 30% of that shifted stays shifted, then we're in a really good spot, I think, to help people make authentic connections in the workplace, build trust, build a sense of belonging, even when they're not in the office and face to face. And the reality is, like, that trend was happening significantly over the last 5 to 10 years to begin with, right? Like the availability of broadband access, the tools like Zoom and Slack to help people still stay connected and work asynchronously, you know, at different parts of the world, right? Because that's the other piece that's been unique about how work gets done is that it's not just contained in your four walls anymore. You've got freelancers and contractors, and, you know, many predictions are that the gig economy will represent 50% of the workforce. in just a few short years. Mm-hmm. So that concept of like, hey, we all need to be in the same physical location to get work done has eroded significantly over the years. And I think this could just be the final big push to kind of move us even further in that direction.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, you know, we've been in business for over 10 years and we have always been sort of a remote team. And, you know, we used GoToMeeting for a long time and now we've been using Zoom pretty heavily for the last, you know, maybe 2 years, which of course Zoom has also exploded. I mean, it's being used for so many, like everything from business meetings to stay at home moms to kids parties and everything else. You know, my daughter is going to have a birthday party over Zoom in a couple days here, you know, and I have always had customers that don't buy into that initially, at least. I said, really, you can do what you do just remotely? I mean, really, you don't have to come here and sit with me in Texas or you sit with me in, you know, Canada or whatever, right? But I think you're right that people are going to realize like, oh, this does work. This isn't so bad. We should do this more often because that's what I've always said. But I think it does make sense that you need something else to support that missing interaction. And I think what you're talking about, some of what your software does, what Cloverleaf does, you know, if I think about my team, like as a manager, if I think about my team of developers, a lot of those folks they're wired very differently than I am. And I was a software developer, and I guess I still am, but was full-time for a long time. So it's probably worse with other managers who didn't ever have that background. But I think, you know, when I'm dealing with and interacting with them, even over the phone, I could definitely see it being helpful to get a nudge like, hey, don't forget, this person thinks differently than you, and they're going to need to hear this information in a certain way. Because, you know, when you're busy and when you're just whatever, you're running around like crazy, you forget that and you assume that everybody thinks like you do.
Yep, that's right. Right. That's right. Yeah, you just project certain sets of behaviors on other people. And, you know, the other thing that I think is really unique about this situation, like everything that you said is absolutely true. And like getting those nudges at the points in time where you need it, it can help you be effective. The thing that I think is really interesting about this current kind of quarantine environment is the sense of isolation. And how do we still help people have authentic human connection through, you know, technology? And that's where I think our technology really excels, because creating those opportunities for people to engage and find connections, even through a Zoom chat or even through a Slack, you know, a Slack thread, or you know, whatever the context is, that's the thing that's missing. You know, with the very first week of us being remote, I was talking with a client who was in Europe. And, you know, one of the things that she said is, you know, thank God I have a dog so I can just feel the breath of another living being on my skin, right? And that's the kind of level of like isolation and kind of, and frankly, depression that I think some people are going to be going to be working through over the next weeks and months.
No, absolutely. And I think it says on your website, your current sort of user count you guys have, I think, what's the number sort of say going into this whole thing, where were you all at in terms of number of users or customers?
Yeah, so we really have been on a rocket ship from that standpoint. We ended 2018 with 3,000 users. We ended 2019 with 165,000 users, and we're over 250,000 today. And we expect that number to more than double over the course of the year. And I think part of it, you know, obviously, and those were projections pre COVID-19. So, you know, what does that look like if more and more people are going remote? They're looking for technologies to exactly what we were just talked about, find, you know, ways to connect with each other through technology.
What's been your most effective marketing channel to achieve that growth to 250 and that you think is going to get you to 500?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different approaches that we've taken to the market. I mean, one is digital, and really kind of being where people are when they're looking for solutions. And so we use SEO, we use some paid, paid search as well. Targeting people who are looking for those kinds of solutions. And, you know, the whole idea of inbound instead of outbound, right? The content marketing, and really focusing that content in a way that is going to be relevant to people who are searching for those solutions has just been really effective for us. And so that's probably our primary. I mean, the other thing is because we use psychometric tools like DISC and like Myers-Briggs, there's a massive coaching and consulting market out there that are using those tools, but don't have a way to sustain or scale the work that they're doing inside of organizations. And so we've partnered with those people. We've created a product that, that's easy and approachable for those coaches and consultants to use. And effectively what they are is our sales and service force. So that's been a really effective market for us as well.
But it lets them sort of stand out among the crowd, you know, if they have that in their peers.
That's right. And it makes them look a bit more relevant from a digital standpoint, because I mean, traditionally that model hasn't been very digital, 40 page reports and they're all printed out, and you know, the time it takes for many of those coaches to even assemble that work and organize it in a way that's going to be compelling for the teams that they're working with can take a lot of time. So we automate that whole process and make it easy for them.
Is that really your ideal customer, you think, is coaches in that space? Is that where you mainly look to grow through, or would you say, I mean, is there some other ideal customer?
We just consider them channel partners. Really who we're focused on is just leaders, managers in an organization. And we love it when someone that is a new manager, first time manager, or someone at lower levels in the organization can just swipe a credit card for $75 a month to get started with our product, because we know they're the ones that are experiencing a lot of that pain. And oftentimes they're the ones that are the least resourced, right? Senior leaders, they have dedicated coaches and they get access to the things that they need from a development standpoint. And that's where a lot of the focus from learning and development tends to get applied. But, giving a new manager tools and resources to be effective with their team, educating them for the first time on, how different the people that they're leading are and how to navigate or how to adapt your style to fit the needs of those people on your team is really powerful. And we're not just giving them those tools, we're actually educating them on how to effectively use it in things like one-on-one conversations and performance reviews. So that ultimately is who we want to support, are individual managers who are just trying to be better.
Right. And so it sounds like they can go on your website, watch a demo, sign up immediately, swipe their credit card. Is that something
they
can do?
Yeah, it is. And there's individual personal plans that give them access to some additional features and capabilities. There is small team plans. And then if you're a coach, there's a page for you as well. And then obviously for the enterprise. And we do have, we layer on a set of features and capabilities and data reporting a layer for enterprise leaders as well. So if you're leading HR or you're a senior leader in the organization and want to look across and think about curating culture and culture change, then our tool is very helpful from that standpoint as well.
That's cool. That's smart that though you all are a relatively young company, I suppose that you've got that sort of sign up, because it's amazing to me how many companies that are quite a lot older. Software companies that still you have to call, you got to email, you can't just do it.
One of the best things, and I honestly don't know why more companies don't do it, is like give something away for free, right? I mean, it's a great way to establish trust with a potential customer. Yeah, they may not upgrade. And yeah, you just gave something for free away. But chances are you built a little bit of brand equity with that person. And when that opportunity for them to need your product comes back around, they're gonna seek you out. They're gonna find you. They're gonna remember your brand, and so that's what we do. I mean, new free accounts typically spend anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes on our site with us, and that's a really powerful time frame to be able to kind of cement ourselves as a trusted advisor for them. And that's we lean into that.
Yeah, sounds like I need to at least go and get a free account.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Check it out. What are some new features you're working on? Where do you think the product will be? Just areas you're trying to get into in the next, say, year or two.
Well, I mean, more immediately, Monday, which is I think March 30th, we're relaunching our Slack app, and we're adding some new features and capabilities. We're actually going to be on the Slack marketplace now. So visible for people who, had never heard of Cloverleaf before. And we think the timing on that's going to be, you know, really, really good for these new remote workers that, you know, have never worked remote before. So that's like immediate term. Longer term, we really want to support the entire professional development process. So we do some stuff with hard skills as well. And, you know, we've got, you know, approvals from Udemy and Coursera to integrate their course content to help people. You know, hey, I just need a 30-minute course on, you know, financial analysis or whatever the case may be. They can get that access directly inside of our platform. 360s, performance reviews. You know, we want to be thinking about that total kind of performance management, professional development, and the needs that individual employees and managers have. Across their entire employee life cycle. One of the cool things about our account is if you get an account, you know, you don't, when you leave an organization, you actually get to take your account with you, right? So it's almost like a 401k for your development plan. And so that's a really unique feature. And, you know, so it can stay with you, you know, over multiple jobs, multiple, you know, if you're a freelancer or a contractor, you know, you still get to take that with you and you can still use it to develop yourself, in whatever context you're in.
Very cool. You know, in and around this space of developing teams and such, obviously you get to work with a lot of people but what's kind of the most personally rewarding project you've worked on recently, either professionally or personally?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, just building this company has been really professionally rewarding and personally rewarding. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, like when we started this, we our kind of like mission and vision is to really give employees a powerful experience that's in line with their strengths and who they are on a daily basis. Because what we know is 60% of your awake life is spent at work, right? And if that's not a great experience, that filters over into all aspects of your life. Right. You can't be a good spouse. You can't be a good father or mother. You can't be a good friend if you're totally exhausted, totally wiped out from the work that you're doing on a daily basis. And, you know, emotionally not in a place to really be able to care for the people in your life. And so for us, that really just kind of drives us. You know, you mentioned earlier that sense of purpose. For us, that sense of purpose is really giving people a powerful work experience where their own personal skills and strengths are in line with the thing that the organization needs them to deliver. And when that happens, there's just something really powerful that happens in that individual that transfers over to all areas of their life. So that's really what we want. And we think, you know, that team environment is the way to reach that because, hey, on my own, I'm only able to accomplish so much. But if I put good people around me that complement my skills and my strengths, then I know I can accomplish way more than I could ever envision on my own. And so both of those things really drive us. And, you know, getting feedback from our customers about, you know, how it's changed some small aspect of the work that they do is just really, really rewarding for us.
Yeah, very cool. Absolutely. So I guess just to summarize, what are the three main challenges that if people are facing, they should reach out to you for help with?
Yeah, I think, you know, those team environments, and there's a lot of challenges inside a team environment that can be problematic, right? Conflict can derail a team quickly. I think the current remote people who are going remote for the first time, right? Like those are challenges that are front and center for people at a team level. And so that's an easy one for us to tackle. The other thing is, you know, the new manager, and you know, you don't have to be 23 and managing people for the first time to be a new manager. Every time you take on a new team assignment, theoretically, you're a new manager, because you've got a new set of personalities, a new set of behaviors, a new set of expectations, and personalities that you are responsible for. And the best way you can effectively lead and help those people not only achieve the best for themselves, but also achieve the best for the organization that you're a part of is to really understand what drives them and what their strengths are and how to deploy those things effectively on a daily basis. So those are the two biggest. And then I think, you know, for coaches, you know, right now, they might actually be struggling to try to, you know, grow their business. And, you know, getting professional development might not necessarily be front of mind if you're just worried about keeping the lights on. And so I think we can help coaches and consultants grow their business. So that would be probably the third challenge that I would say definitely reach out to us.
Yeah, I mean, I think now is the time to act, right? You know, if you're a business that relies on any kind of, like I said, coaching for businesses and stuff, I mean, now is not the time to shelter and let your business sort of fall off. Maybe while people are sitting around not doing a whole lot at home is the time to call them up and have a conversation. Now, probably more than ever, is easier to get through to people.
Absolutely. We, you know, I think there's kind of two mindsets that I see a lot right now. One is, hey, I'm getting sucked into the news cycle, right? And it feels like hopelessness and despair. And the other is, well, I don't have any control over those things, but I do have control over the things that are right in front of me. And so for people that want to kind of pull themselves out of the hopelessness of the news cycle, you know, what are three or four things that you can do today to put yourself in a position to be successful tomorrow? And I think the ones that are going to be successful on the other end of this are the ones that take that approach and they invest during this time period, you know, where we're not face to face, where we may not necessarily have some of the same pressures from clients in front of us. Now's the time to invest and set yourself up for success once that demand returns.
So if folks want to go to your website, what's the address?
It's cloverleaf.me, so .me. So a little bit different, but you can go to cloverleaf.me and then, you know, there's different products and there's a menu of options at the top of the page. They can pick and choose which one makes the most sense for them. And yeah, we'd love to hear from them.
Yeah. And if folks have an urgent, pressing question, what's your phone number or email address they can reach out to?
My email address is Darren, D-A-R-R-I-N. I know, not exactly the most intuitive spelling. So Darrin at cloverleaf.me. And then they can reach me on the phone 859-240-9861. We also on any of our pages on cloverleaf.me, we have a little chat window. You know, during business hours that is manned by multiple people and we're relatively responsive. So if you've got questions, even if it's just, hey, I've got conflict with my team, what do I do about that? You know, we literally help people through those conversations as well.
Awesome. Well, Darren, it's been a great conversation. So relevant to the current time, what you all are doing and the needs that are out there that everybody's sort of, you know, the changes that everybody's having to sort of weather through. So very much appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for the time today, Sam. Thanks for allowing me the chance to chat.
Sure, absolutely. And hopefully we'll get to be able to get together sometime in person.
Hey, I look forward to it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.